Welcome to AFL Tonight. This is ArenaDefend.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm your host, Tim Capper, and according to my playoff scenarios for my co-hosts, this week it should be Dom, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that.
Oh, it's Adam! Oh my god.
I have not been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs yet.
What the heck? Damn rule book. Oh, no wonder. I'm using the 2012 playoff scenarios. Such a silly guy. Oh, boy. Yeah. Nice to have a nice jab. But first, you know what, before we begin, we might as well go ahead and give a hearty congratulations to Leanne Cozart, who is graduating. She's graduating from ArenaFan, Adam.
Yeah, she graduated from college about a month and a half ago, and graduated from us and is now going to be working over in Bristol at ESPN. I think it's next week, she said.
Yeah, I think she tweeted.
Or next month. Yeah. I miss exactly when it was, but very soon.
Yeah, she tweeted a picture today. It was talking about, I think they had some rookie games, I think I saw it. So maybe she's already in Bristol or seen pictures of it that's going to be occurring. But
That's rookie camp. That's where they send their new
recruits.
Their newest.
Yeah.
Employees too.
And, you know, Leanne is following the footsteps of a few known alumni of ArenaFan, including, Thomas Goodhines from, you know, the, Philadelphia Soul. And, who else? I think we have
the mayor of Oklahoma City.
Yeah, mayor of Oklahoma City, Mitch Cornett. That is correct. So congratulations, Leanne. We hate to lose you. You did a fantastic job for us, for us this year. Good luck in your endeavors for ESPN. Christmas, you know, it's so goddamn... Whoa, where's my first bomb? Not an F-bomb, but anyways, it's so damn cold. It's cold at Christmas time usually, Adam, but in Christmas in July, it's freaking warm. But, you know what? Didn't stop them. Whether it was Sharknadoes or whatever that may have been over in Jacksonville, they had Christmas in July in Jacksonville this past week. And I will admit... Of any of the giveaways that I have seen a team do, the ornament of Santa Moss was one of the most unique things that I've seen in a long time.
We both wanted one.
Yeah.
And we were both turned down for one.
Yeah.
So if anybody from Jacksonville is watching this and you happen to have them,
and you don't
Arena
want
fan
it,
would like them.
Yeah, and you don't want it. Yeah, we'd like to have a set. That's they went all out in this, Adam, and any of the fans who didn't watch the broadcast on AFL Live. They actually, as I said, they went all out on this. They had lights, LED lights strung throughout the entire, net system, throughout the rebar of all four nets. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. So they, you know, they went ahead and they went, you know, all out. And, unfortunately, you know what? The Grinch stole Christmas that day, unfortunately. It was, you know, the Who's over in Jacksonville were not very happy after that game, now were they?
not nice analogy there, Tim. But yes, no, yes, Whoville was a little upset in Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Anybody hasn't read The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, I suggest that you do.
Yeah.
30 seconds, I suggest that you do.
Exactly. You know what? I swear, there was... A lot of stuff, and we said it before, having the show taped on a Wednesday really has seemed to work out so well for us this year. And today was like no other day, I tell you. But first, I think we're going to start with something that we had a interesting time talking about this past week. Playoffs, you know. I don't know where
playoffs?
To... Playoffs? Yeah, playoffs! You know, Well, I don't know where to start. It started off basically with, as we do at ArenaFan, we try to make sure that we get out the information to the fans as quickly as possible. Whether the league's, you know, we know the league's going to be announcing their own scenarios later on in the week. We used our math skills and used the information that was readily available to us on the AFL website to go ahead and calculate who's going to be where and who was eliminated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, because remember this past weekend, Adam, the league had said that Arizona was going to clinch with a win, and that was that. They were going to clinch. But it didn't stop there, now did it?
No, not exactly. And unfortunately, I guess I need to give some credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. First, since you brought up Arizona first, we, and when I say we, I guess me, you, and the rest of the crew that was working on these tiebreaker scenarios till almost 4 a.m. on Sunday.
Yep.
Just kind of glossed over the Arizona thing. I think we all kind of just took it for gospel for what it was and said, oh, of course Arizona has to be winning the tiebreaker with everyone. They're Arizona. So I owe hat tip to a guy named David, who you all on the message boards would know better as Cali NW, for kind of tipping us off on this one and saying, wait, this doesn't make sense. Can you check into this? And we did. And we looked into it, and I am still insistent to this day that Arizona has not actually clinched the Western Division by the rules which the AFL had previously laid out.
And I will agree with you with that, because I did the actual work myself. Even though we did it once, I did it again. It was more or less just to prove a point to somebody that, yes, the math that you had done was correct, and that, yes, we can count here at Arena Fan. So
I am an accountant.
I am backing you up on this 100%, just based on the rules that they had. That, yes, three-way tie, Arizona would not be the division champion.
Heads up tie, they would not be the division champions.
That is correct. That is
so,
correct.
And for those of you who have not read the article and don't know what we're talking about, why haven't you? No, I'm kidding. The Spokane Shock and the Arizona Rattlers would have to go to, I believe it is the second tiebreaker, to determine the division title winner, and the second, third tiebreaker.
No, it was
the fourth tiebreaker? The first tiebreaker is obviously head-to-head games, and they
correct.
Split. And the second tiebreaker is record and division.
Right.
And both teams went 4-2, and I believe this was the third tiebreaker.
Oh, you are correct. Yeah. Record
against common opponents. And thanks to our ever so unbalanced schedule, Spokane has only played 12 games against teams on Arizona's schedule, and Arizona has played 14 games against teams on Spokane's schedule. Arizona will have gone 11-3 in those games if it were to lose its last two. Spokane would be 10-2 at the end of the season if this is how it played out.
Right.
And if that were the case, and in the eyes of everyone who knows anything about math, 10-2 is a better percentage than 11-3.
Yes, and going back to the way what the league had published originally last year, which we have, it is available. Thank you, Wayback Machine. It does show back in 2012 for the playoff rules that were set by the league. It included one of the scenarios was the winner would be by winning percentage, not by, as we have been told, that we were told by the league, not by overall wins.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be. I mean, let's be realistic about it. It's not Spokane's fault that it had to play, it had two fewer opportunities essentially to get, quote, more wins than Arizona. And I'll bring up something that our good buddy Chris Arnold, who's a photographer for the Storm, brought up. I don't remember what numbers he used, but basically he said something along the lines of
13-0 and 12-1.
Yeah, what if Spokane?
Sorry. 13-1. Yeah, 13. Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. What if Spokane were 12-0 and Arizona were 13-1? And I guess based upon the rules that the AFL is using now, 13-1 would be better than a perfect 12-0.
Yeah.
So it drives me nuts. I know it's wrong. Anybody with half an understanding of it would understand very quickly that it's just wrong. And that wasn't even, that was only half of it.
Yeah, that was only half of it. I don't know where to go next.
The second half of it involved the other conference involving
yes.
the Tampa Bay Storm and the New Orleans Voodoo and Orlando
Predators.
Oh,
yeah, I thought you were referencing something else, but yes, you are correct. Go ahead.
Oh, no. We're still on playoff tiebreakers at this point. Right now Tampa Bay is at 7-11. At 7-9, not 7-11. Orlando is at 6-10, and New Orleans is at 5-11. And all three teams still control their own destiny to get into the playoffs, because there are two spots up in the air for the three teams, and Orlando and New Orleans play each other next week in Week 19.
Right.
So my argument was that the Storm, based upon the same understanding that the league gave us and gave everyone else, that the Storm should be in the playoffs. And the logic behind this is if all three teams, New Orleans, Tampa Bay, and Orlando, end up locked in at 7-11 against each other, the first tiebreaker should be record in games against each other. And if that were the case, New Orleans would be 3-1 against Tampa Bay and Orlando. Tampa Bay would be 2-2 in those games, and Orlando would be 1-3 in those games.
Uh-huh.
And if you go under the assumption that the league has made that you eliminate a team first as opposed to awarding a team, Orlando would be out in that instance. And that would be the only way Tampa Bay would be able to get caught by both teams. But what the league is claiming is they're basically skipping over that first tiebreaker and going straight to common opponents. And with that being the case, both New Orleans and Orlando would have more wins against common opponents. I believe the number is 4 for both of them than Tampa Bay would have, which would just be 3.
Right.
If memory serves me, on those particular tiebreakers. So, needless to say, the Storm are kind of up in arms about this because I think they're clinched. They think they're clinched. And it seems as though the league has kind of been scrambling for an answer about it.
And I think also from what I'm understanding, not only from fans, but it seems like the fans in Spokane, you know, even though maybe a foregone conclusion coming up this week with Arizona, the possibility is still there. And you know what? Just because you gave out somebody's, you know, Western Division Championship shirts, that doesn't mean anything. You can always make a correction, but.
Hey, the NFL makes up Super Bowl shirts for both teams in the Super Bowl every single year.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them get handed out and some of them end up getting shipped off to like Africa.
That's right.
But, you know, I'm still very troubled and bothered by, a lot of this that has gone on because it seems as though the league has kind of gone out of its way and certain people have gone out of their way to give in particular me, an arena fan, a very hard time about what we're doing, accusing me specifically of, quote, stirring the pot. I've read that a lot of times. And others saying that, you know, we don't make the rules. And look, you're right. We don't make the rules.
That's right.
But all it is my goal and the goal of everyone who works for this website is to bring the most accurate information to everyone out there, fans and teams and the likes, as quickly as we can. And as of this taping, I believe, which is on Wednesday night, I believe the league has still not even put out its playoff scenarios for the week. And meanwhile, we've had it up. We've updated it. We've updated it again. We've apologized with the statement. That we made earlier, I believe it was on Monday, we made our statement and we've since updated it and the league still has not published anything. I know the teams don't know the tiebreaker rules. I can tell you there are at least two teams out there that are still very confused by this situation. And in my opinion, the league has just been making up rules, kind of as they go to cover their own backsides because either they screwed up the math or this is how they want the math to be.
Well, and for me, and when we go back to what was on the webpage back in April, what was on the webpage after that, and then what was on the webpage as of this week, the three-way tie was completely taken off of the website, which didn't make any sense to me. These modifications that were made, if you're going to go by wins, you need to say wins. If you're going to go by if you're going to go by winning percentage, you need to say winning percentage. Neither of those was actually said, within the scenarios that they listed, Adam. So it's – I don't understand – all we want is clear and concise information. That's really all that we're asking for.
And we're also not showing any favoritism towards anyone. Look, I don't hate the Arizona Rattlers. I don't hate the Tampa Bay Storm. I might have hated the Tampa Bay Storm back from when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But, I don't hate the Tampa Bay Storm. I just want the information to be right. And the saddest part of this to me is I know when I go to bed at night, if Tampa Bay, Orlando, and New Orleans all finish at 7-11, the wrong team is going to be out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
And if by chance, and again, I don't think it's going to happen, Tampa Bay should take care of business this week against Pittsburgh and make that moot. Arizona should take care of the business this week and beat Chicago and make all of this moot. But in the event that it didn't happen, and this is why it's called clinching, there is no mathematical possibility. In this case, in my opinion, there is a mathematical possibility for both based upon the rules that the league has made. I know it's not right. And that's what drives me more nuts than anything else, because the league should have accountability for making it right first and covering their own backsides second. I understand you made the announcements. I understand if I were an Arizona Rattler fan, I'd be upset at me too. Because I would say, look, the league said that this is the case, so it must be the case. Unfortunately, it's pretty bush league, in my opinion, that the league really has to kind of justify its own tiebreakers without even ever publishing them. There is not another league in this world that does not mention what its tiebreakers are ahead of time.
Exactly, and even so far as I think the NFL has 10 scenarios that they break it down, and each of them are laid out specifically. You know, it says, you know, whether it be total points against somebody or head-to-head points or tiebreak or be, you know, overall conference record, et cetera, et cetera. It's all laid out. I understand. If this was an oversight, okay, I will give that to them. But from April till whenever it was changed, there was some modification to it. You know, the information that was put there back in April that we saw, it looked, the way that it was written, it looked like it may have been from, you know, an operations manual or something like that, because it said, you know, it said rule 5.1. So I'm just guessing at that. This year, later on, it looked like it was a direct copy from the fact and record book. That's what it seemed. From last year, possibly. But then they went ahead and modified it. I don't know. Adam, it's, as you said, accountability. Arena Fan was not asking for, we weren't asking to say, you're right. That's not the case. We're here to help. I've always said that at Arena Fan, sure, we work for the site, but we also work for the teams, the league, and we work for all the fans. That's what we do. We're here to give the information and as correct as possible.
As quickly as possible.
And as quickly as possible. If we have an error, we have no problem making a retraction.
And we have done that enough times.
Yes,
and
I have
done that enough times personally.
Yes, we have. But it's, you know, we really didn't hear, we don't hear their side of it, why they did this, Adam. The matter of fact is, there were at least two changes to the playoff rules from what we've seen just since March. Since April.
And we have asked for clarification and do not get statements from the Arena Football League for the most part, and this is no exception.
Yeah. From what we're hearing, the wins rule trumps the winning percentage rule was interpreted and understood. Well, if that's the case, fortunately, in my opinion, it's wrong. Because when you figure out math, and I said, it was a great example what Chris did when it came to talking about the, you know, 12-1 versus 13-0 versus 12-1. 12 and whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a perfect example. Perfect example. You know?
Yeah, how can you be better than undefeated?
Yeah, exactly.
And the answer is to play two more games.
So, obviously our wish it would be that there will be a balanced schedule. There may not be. There is sometimes there's not in the NFL too. It's true. But I think there are enough teams that they're trying to, they have an, you know, common opponents.
Yeah, they have their formulas that they go through every year. And the AFL just doesn't have the A, consistency and B, balance in the league, in terms of, you know, the NFL is nicely poised. Four divisions, four teams, two conferences.
Exactly.
That poise is not ever in place in the AFL. And that's fine. You know, not everything is going to be perfect.
No.
But rules need to be in place is to make sure that when the scheduling cannot be perfect, that no team gets screwed because of it.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I completely agree. Now, what do you guys think? I mean, I know you've chimed on it before, and anything else that we're going to talk about, because it'll be very interesting for the rest of the show, I can guarantee you that. But what do you guys think? There are multiple ways you can let us know. You can go to our Facebook account, you can go to our Instagram, and there is Twitter. Both all at Arena Fan, and we'll give you our emails at the end of the show. I don't know. I think there's so much more. I can't remember if you wanted to get some more off your chest concerning this, Adam, but For me.
No, I'm pretty good. Yeah. But it's that, you know, we really were never given an opportunity to defend ourselves in some of the things that were out there. And like I said, a lot of people thought we were just kind of stirring the pot. And it really was anything but the case. I'm not trying to make bad on anyone. I just want to see it be done right. And when it was shot down, even though I don't like the explanation and have made it very clear that I don't like the explanation, and anyone who follows me on Twitter knows that I have put together a large string of curse words in regards to this.
Yeah.
Over my personal feelings of it from an arena fan standpoint. You know, we just want it to be right by everyone, and we hope that all of the teams and all of the players and all of the coaches and everyone in the league office and all of you fans understand that we're not intentionally trying to do anything just to prove a point by any stretch of the imagination.
Now, Arena Fans always has been about getting out the news, positive, negative, or neutral. It's always been just to get the information out. We do have an interview this week. It's very unique. We'll be playing it in a little bit. This week is the first annual Bacon Bowl in Iowa, Adam, between the Utah Blaze and the Iowa Barnstormers.
Bacon.
It's you know what? This interview is so unique. It is so delicious. I don't know how many more adjectives I could use until people get sick about it. But I think it's interesting. I think you guys will like it. We'll play that in a couple of minutes. Before we get to the Bushi times two or Bushi squared, there's one thing I wanted to just quickly bring up, Adam, and I think we touched on it slightly last week. I just wanted to know what your comments are. This past week ended the Rockford experiment in Rockford for the Chicago Rush, based on what happened with the arena issues at the All-Star Arena and in Chicago itself. Overall, they averaged less than 4,000 a game for the three games that they held there. My understanding is from speaking with the BMO Bank Harris Center on Monday that they were actually very honored to be able to host these three games for the Chicago Rush, even though there were circumstances why they actually hosted them. And they did say that they were very impressed with the Chicago Rush team representatives that were there who were representing the team while the team was there. But when it comes, if you were to rate it overall, I mean, you know, maybe attendance aside, Adam, how would you call it? Would this experiment be successful?
Well, Rockford itself gets an A. The BMO Harris Center gets an A. The rest of the organization gets a big, fat, ugly F for it. You know, there were times, and I remember like with the Louisville Fire, they wanted to go from the AF2 to the AFL. Shot down. And why were they shot down? Because they didn't have an arena that was big enough to play in. I don't remember what they call the place there that they played in. It may have been that crazy KFC Yum court, whatever they were calling it at that point. But I don't know exactly where they were playing in Louisville, but wherever it wasn't big enough to meet AFL standards.
Right.
Well, now you take the game to this little freaking postage stamp in this little town that's almost 100 miles away from where you're used to playing. You know, I give credit to the fans that showed up, especially to this most recent game, which was not originally scheduled, obviously, to be in Rockford. But, you know, if you're asking me whether this could ever happen again, God, I sure hope not.
Yeah, and by the way, you're dead on. It was the KFC Yum Center. You're dead on. Nice.
Nice.
Nice. So they have two sponsors for one arena?
No. KFC, Yum Brands.
Yeah, I know, but...
KFC is amongst the Yum Brands.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay, I did not know. Because I know up here in Canada, I think, you know, they're not always associated with the same group of people.
Yeah. It's KFC, and I think like Taco Bell is in there. There's a couple other of the Yum brands.
Is Pizza Hut in there too?
Maybe.
They at one point owned by PepsiCo and then Yum bought them? I don't know, we're getting way off topic.
But it's a disgrace to play arena football games there, in my opinion. And look, it's no offense against Rockford. Like I said, I think Rockford gets an A for putting on the best show they could possibly put on, even though they had a field that was kind of cut and pasted together in a stadium that kickoffs felt like they could like literally leave the freaking stadium. And even though they couldn't even sell the place out, you know, and I don't know what capacity was there, but it's not very high. So, you know, I would hope if the Chicago Rush or some incarnation of a Chicago arena football team is going to be back next year that they are playing in some arena and some stadium that's a lot bigger than what they had in Rockford. And I hope they have a lot more, I guess, credibility and local, you know, local credibility to be able to pull in more than the 3,000 something, announced attendance figures. We'll call them that.
Right.
That they had.
And, you know, you go back to see what Chicago actually averaged in the Allstate Arena. You know, it wasn't that much more. You know, all things considering, the team is still in the thick of the playoff race. They're actually in first place. They're tied for first place, but hold the tiebreaker so far. You know, the team itself, you know, the organization that's, you know, gets an app, but I'll give the team at least a B. You know, from what they've had to go through, and Coach McMillan's been able to get his team, and on top of that, and we're going to give props, by the way, give a quick shout out before we get to where we're talking about before, quick shout out to our Chicago Rush beat writer, Jeff Sims, for letting us know that the Chicago Rush have been Montreal Expo'd. That's the best way to make the reference, because if, for those of you who remember when the Expos were under the ownership of Major League Baseball, they were not allowed to make September call-ups. Poor Chicago has been the exact same way for the entire year, almost, from what I'm understanding. Their roster, I think, if I'm not mistaken, was set at 20 the entire time. So if somebody gets hurt or seriously hurt, they might be able to make a change. But, you know, thanks to Jeff Sims, it's more information about the Chicago Rush that we didn't know about. So it's,
yeah,
just something else against them, against the team itself.
Yeah, and it's amazing that this team has been through. It's really tough in the Central Division to determine which team has had it tougher this year. Obviously, Chicago has had all of its problems having to play 8-10 road games, mm-hmm. and not to mention the 3 road games, you know, essential road games in Rockford. So obviously Coach McMillan has done a remarkable job against all odds there. But look what's going on in San Antonio too. How many quarterbacks have they gone through? Lee Johnson is winning with Rohan freaking Davey.
I know, I'm very surprised too. Yeah, I know.
So, and in my opinion, I know it's not going to work this way. I know Kevin Guy is going to win Coach of the Year and look, he's had a great year. The team has had a great year. He's got a stacked deck. You know, the decks that have been dealt to Bob McMillan and Lee Johnson are ridiculous, and in my opinion, whichever one of those two guys leads their team into the playoffs should be the coach of the year.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you're right in both opinions that Coach Guy will probably win it, but I probably would give the nod probably to Coach McMillan myself, actually. But they've, you know. If they make the playoffs, it will be a very interesting playoff season for the Chicago Rush, but that's something that we'll have to talk about down the line.
So. Yeah, we can already say it because SWX published it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the Rush are going to have to play road games in the playoffs. They will not be hosting. They will be traveling on the road to either Spokane or San Jose. I hope for their sake it's San Jose because they're already going to be there in week 19 for their last, quote, home game of the year because that's the game that was –
moved.
Sold.
Yeah,
given,
sold.
Whatever.
I'll say sold.
Yeah. To San Jose. So yeah, San Antonio would host, but Chicago, by what they are calling arena issues, will not be hosting in Rockford or obviously at Allstate Arena.
That's correct. And remember, as Adam said, it's not something that we have not heard this from either the Chicago Rush or either the two Western teams, San Jose or from Spokane. This was published in online on SWX News and Weather Now, I think it's called, at a site that's up in Washington State and Idaho, if I'm not mistaken. They publish it themselves, so that's where we got this information. So it's not meant to be bulletin board material, but it's something that we do know. So, you know, it's going to be the way it's going to be. So, Adam, are you hungry?
Bacon.
Do you like bacon? I know you haven't seen them. Epic Mealtime. Ugh. They seem to be the quintessential group that's able to use anything, do anything and everything with bacon. Luckily for us, we have found a group that is almost just as they are dedicated to bacon just as much. Well, you know, as we were mentioning before, there is the Bacon Bowl this week in Iowa. Well, we were actually able to speak with Brooke Reynolds, who is with the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival, about their organization and how they're able to get together with the Iowa Barnstormers to put on the first annual Bacon Bowl. So we're going to listen to that delicious conversation between myself and Brooks, and I promise you I will stop in the second half of the show. And when we get back, we have a lot more. And you know what? Second half of the second half of our show is going to be brought to you by the letter B. We'll be right back. Bacon. For most of us, there's nothing that can top it. You know, just ask the guys over at Epic Mealtime. Well, but what if I told you that we could combine bacon and arena football? What does that do to your taste buds? Well, on the line with me now is Brooke Reynolds, who is the president and chairman of Bacon of the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival. Thanks for joining us.
What's going on? How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, Brooks. For those of you who do not know about the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival, give us a short history on how it started and where you guys are today.
The Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival is the world's premier bacon festival based in Des Moines, Iowa. It started out from humble beginnings in Spirit Lake, Iowa at the Porter Family Cabin in 2001. Just a group of guys gathered for some bacon fellowship around, you know, everyone's favorite salty cured meat, bacon. And we did that for about 6 years. And then, you know, as all my buddies got married and had kids, it was hard for us to get away. And, you know, in 2007, we had a class called All About Bacon that was a two-hour lecture given by the professor of bacon, Leo Landis. And 18 guys just had a, you know, great time learning all about bacon and got diplomas. And then in August of 2007, we were at a local establishment in a local newspaper saying, what does Des Moines need? And my response without hesitation was a festival dedicated to bacon. And one of the owners, Jeff Bruning of the High Life Lounge, said, we can make that happen. And it happened in 2008. We had our first event March 1st, which was National Pig Day. And then we started as just, you know, small 200-person event, and it was great. And we had so much fun. We were like, hey, let's do it again. In 2009, we had 400 people, and just, you know, we got some, you know, people kind of started talking about it, and it kind of just grew. The popularity grew. And then 2010, we moved venues to the Scottish Rite Consistory. We had 800 people. And, you know, we just kind of almost doubled every year. And, you know, last year we had our sixth year. It was the at the Iowa State Fair. We had almost 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
We went through about 8,000 pounds of bacon, and that's kind of how we got started.
8,000 pounds of bacon. That is a lot of bacon, Brooks. Now, if you were to give everybody an idea, how much bacon did you use the first year?
The first year we had about 450 pounds, 500 pounds. I'm not sure the exact number, but, you know, that's a lot. I mean, that's
a lot of bacon. Yeah.
That is a lot of bacon for 200 people. We went through a lot that first year, and it was just a fun event. And, you know, it is. We were fortunate the Des Moines Area Community College picked it up for us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, we never dreamed it would be anything like it is today, and it's just a fun event, and we're just trying to build on the, you know, bacon fellowship model. And our mission statement, you know, it's pretty simple. This is what it is. It's to improve the enjoyment of all things bacon by providing education, recognition, advocacy, and research on behalf of the masses, everyone everywhere. All of them, we are serious. Seriously, dude, it's serious.
Now, besides bacon itself, well, I mean, for anybody who, you know, only knows just regular bacon, what do you do at these festivals with bacon? What can you, well, obviously I'm sure the sky's the limit, but give us a few ideas of what you make with bacon.
Right now is actually my favorite season to do anything with bacon. and that's to make a BLT. I mean, you get your favorite bacon, you know, cook it up however way you like it, toast some bread, you know, a couple slices of tomatoes, some, you know, red leaf or romaine lettuce. Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, it's perfect time for tomatoes. I mean, I've got a friend in Carlisle, Iowa. Her name's Jenny Smith, and she's got an organic tomato farm, and she has some of the best tomatoes that are just perfect in season. And other things are, you know, actually a lot of people are taking bacon and making a lot of sweet items. The Devilish Pig Bakery is making a bacon and cheddar cupcake. I have not had it, but I can't wait to try it because, you know, bacon and cheese in a cupcake form, I mean, how can you beat that? But, you know, one of my favorite things to do is to candy some bacon and incorporate it into, you know, an ice cream that would probably go well with it, like a butter pecan.
Yep.
Or,
yep.
You know, actually what would be good with that is if you could find like a chunky pineapple ice cream, just because the pineapple, the sweetness of the pineapple, but the salty, you know, sugary, even if you candy the bacon, that goes well. You know, wrap it in shrimp, put it on a grilled chicken sandwich. You know, you can make a 50-50 burger, which is 50% bacon, 50%
ground beef.
Hamburger, you know, ground beef, and just, that's great. Slater's 50-50s, you know, kind of put that on the map for that. You can, you know, I like to wrap asparagus with bacon and kind of get that and throw that on the griddle. Brussels sprouts, you know, do a nice, I mean, there's so many different uses for bacon. It's just a, you know, it's one of the most, you can make it sweet, savory, you can just eat it by itself, you can wrap it in something. I mean, there's just so many different ways to utilize it and to make it, incorporate it into a meal.
Exactly. And I'm sure, you know, at least recently, it seems mostly that the guys over at Epic Mealtime have really brought bacon to light. And, I'm glad, you know, they have made so many things that I didn't think that it could even exist at all, Brooks, but it, I said 450 pounds up to 8,000 pounds of bacon. That's absolutely crazy. I know that you said that, you're going to be actually heading out of the country, to have another of your bacon festivals, aren't you?
Yeah, we're going to have the third Reykjavik Bacon Festival in, Reykjavik, Iceland on September 7th. We were really fortunate. We went over there a couple of years ago, and our hosts, who were Marshall Porter, who's the chief bacon officer, his brother went to med school with Dr. Hjalti Gudmundsson, who's from Iceland, and we got hooked up with his brother, Dr. Bogi Gudmundsson, and Bogi and Bensi and Persi and Boli, and basically met all these awesome dudes in Iceland, and they basically took us under their wing and helped us put on a small bacon fest the first year we went there, and then the second year it was even bigger. I mean, the first year we had probably 400 people.
Right.
And last year I think we had, the numbers are kind of, they say 8,000, I think more like 5, but the streets were pandemonium for 3 hours.
That's cool.
But yeah, we go over there, we do some fun events, interact with, you know, the Icelanders and have, you know, do a couple Icelandic, you know, we went rafting last year, went swimming in glacial, you know, hot springs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've got some interesting menu items, to say the least. So, you know, we had a couple of those, you know, we ate whale, puffin, you know, fermented shark is one of the items that we ate when we were over there.
Wow.
So it was kind of one of those interesting things.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Now heading back here to North America, this coming up week, some of you and the Iowa Barnstormers have sort of teamed up, and you're having the Bacon Bowl this week between the Utah Blaze and the Iowa Barnstormers. How did you two get involved?
Grant Young and I are buddies, and Grant used to work for the Iowa Barnstormers. And we were out one night having a couple beers, and we were just talking about, you know, what the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival and the Iowa Barnstormers could do to, you know, partner in an event. And we were like, oh, we could do this, we could do that. And then Grant had the great idea to do, hey, we should do a bowl game and just have a game that's, you know, that is centered around bacon, that kind of ties in what we do with the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival, make it a family-friendly event.
Mm-hmm.
have some activities that are before the game, you know, a fun tailgate, you know, something that you see at a football game, you know, an NFL game or a, you know, college game, and that's what we need. We, you know, hey, bring back that tailgating atmosphere. And so, yeah, that's what we're doing this Saturday, July 20th at the Veterans Community Choice Credit Union parking lot that's just west of Wells Fargo Arena, or as I like to call it, the barn, or the new barn. You know, we're going to have some great menu items, some great bacon, unique bacon menu items, you know, like a bacon cheeseburger slider, a BLT wrap, a bacon jalapeno popper, bacon cupcakes, bacon gooners, you know, bacon a sample. There's going to be, you know, kids activities, inflatables, that kind of fun stuff, face
right.
paint. We're going to have a dunk tank where you're going to be able to dunk the bacon heckler, Mac McCormick. After, you know, you spend 5 minutes with him, you'll want to, you know, try to toss him in the water.
Right, right.
And it's just going to be a fun thing. We've got Randy Burke and the Prisoners that are going to be playing, a great rockabilly band. Randy's, you know, great, great Iowan. So, yeah, it'll just be a fun event that's all centered around, you know, the Barnstormers and the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival, and celebrate every meat that everyone enjoys.
Well, you know, hey, you can't mistake it when you have – when you combine bacon and the pigskin, you know, I mean, now if people wanted to get tickets, I think if I'm not mistaken, the Barnstormers and you guys are also offering a package if fans want to go to the game and join you guys for your tailgate. Is that right?
Correct. Packages are available at BlueRibbonBaconFestival.com. They're $25. It gets you a ticket to the game. It gets you a commemorative mug. It gets you entrance into the Iowa Bacon Bowl tailgate, and it gets you your first beverage for free. So if you'd like an ice cold Coors Light 16-ounce draw, you know, that can be that's what you get. So it's a fun package. You know, tickets are available again at BlueRibbonBaconFestival.com. So go online and try to get those. And yeah, this will just be a fun event. We're having, you know, sweet corn season right now.
Right.
Just started, and one of the guys is making a bacon butter to put on fresh cooked sweet corn. How does that sound?
Bacon butter. Interesting.
Mott's Family Farm is making a bacon butter to put on fresh cooked sweet corn. I mean,
that sounds almost as addicting as and artery clogging as the poutine up here in Montreal.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Now, obviously, you have a bowl game. Now, if I'm not mistaken, whoever wins this game, and obviously I think everybody's going to be rooting for the Barnstormers to win this game, there happens to also be a trophy.
Oh, yes. The Iowa Bacon Bowl is up for grabs this weekend. It is, you know, we need to keep it in Iowa. That's the thing, is we can't let the Utah Blaze win it. We've got to keep it here in the heartland. I mean, I'm going to be very upset if we lose the Iowa Bacon Bowl.
I saw if nobody has seen the actual Bacon Bowl trophy, it's a unique trophy. It's probably one of the most delicious trophies I've ever seen, I will admit. You can head over to the Iowa Barnstormers webpage if you want to take a peek at it, I know, or over to their Facebook page. I will admit, Brooks, if ever I have a chance, I'm going to try to make sure that I come down, or if you happen to have one up north, in Canada, hey, it may be worth the travel time to head down there to see what you guys can put on. So if anybody wanted to contact you specifically about the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival or to see any of your history or to see your upcoming schedule, how would they do that?
Get in touch. Go to our website at BlueRibbonBaconFestival.com. There's the contact page. You know, our email is real simple. It's blueribbonbaconfestival@gmail.com. But yeah, go to our website, like us on Facebook. You know, there's ways, you know, just, yeah, that's a great way you can get a hold of me. You know, we'd love to hear from anybody that loves bacon and wants to be involved with the world's premier bacon festival. You know, we'll probably have 15,000 people here in the heartland, next year. We're actually going to announce, when the date is during halftime of the Iowa Bacon Bowl, so that'll be a fun event. We're dropping 400 parachutes filled with bacon from the rafters of Wells Fargo Arena.
I'm going to need to see those pictures. That actually sounds
– oh, yeah.
That sounds interesting.
You know it.
Oh, wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Brooks Reynolds. He is the president and chairman of Bacon for the Blue Ribbon Bacon Festival. Brooks, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you.
Well, Adam, when a guy goes by the title of president and chairman of Bacon, you know you're dedicated to what you do, right? I mean,
I'm Jewish, and I think that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, these guys do everything. I'd love to go to one of their festivals. I mean, I love bacon. I love anything bacon. And now that, you know, you see with people like Epic Mealtime and stuff like that, with stuff that they do, it's just like, oh, bacon. What can I say? Well, I did say that the second half of the show was going to be brought to you by the letter B. Very, very interesting. I think the first thing we're going to talk about, Predators is like a tête-à-tête between the Predators and the city of Orlando. Ding, 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 round, possibly more than round one, but it seems like these two combatants really do not like each other.
Yeah, the city of Orlando and the Predators have not gotten along really ever, dare I say, or at least certainly since 96 when Brett Bushy, and at the time, I don't remember what, I think it was called Orlando Predators Football LLC, took over the team. Yeah, there's always been a spat there. We've always kind of been treated like second class citizens in this city. Even when the Predators were selling out virtually every game and the Magic weren't selling out anything, it was always kind of like, it was a Magic town, but the running joke was that, bosses went to Magic games. Their workers underneath them went to Predator games.
Okay.
And it's just, the Magic were always kind of the stuck-up snooty bunch, and the Predators were like the little rebels in the city, but they were the rebels that had a bit of a cause and they served a purpose. So it was just kind of always the secondary thing. But in this case, the city of Orlando is suing the Orlando Predators for advertising, and we broke this story on, I believe it was last Friday. And what this is stemming from is a sponsorship that the Magic signed as an exclusive sponsor with JP Morgan Chase. And it's in direct competition with one of the Predators' primary sponsors of Fairwinds Credit Union.
Right.
So the Magic are based in the city of Orlando are saying that the Predators owe the Magic all the money from this advertiser that they shouldn't have had. And the Predators are claiming that in their agreement with the city and with their lease, that anytime the Magic add another exclusive sponsor, that the Magic will pay the Predators $50,000. The Predators apparently haven't paid that, or I'm sorry, the Magic have not paid that 50 grand, which is why the Predators have not paid the $24,000 that the city is going after. So it's gotten a little ugly. Brett Bushy claimed that he was going to countersue, something that I would have expected out of him. And look, I think he's right. You know, it's a lousy deal that the Predators are in right now. And I know they don't have any other choice because there's nowhere else to go in the city but to play by the Magic's rules. But the Magic just can't be changing the rules every 2 seconds. Hearing that, AFL, you can't just change the rules every 2 seconds.
I think
it's like I said, it became a very ugly situation and a very public situation on Friday night and into Saturday in the Orlando media.
I think you'd also mentioned too that the Solar Bears that also have a
RECL team have an agreement with Fairwinds Credit Union as well. Basically the exact same type of sponsorship and all the same exact promotions they do at Predator games, they also do at Solar Bear games. It's my opinion, and I really have not gotten anyone to be able to speak to me about this, that the reason the Solar Bears got away with it, A, the Solar Bears are liked more by the Magic. They've got a lot more common interests with the Magic as opposed to the Predators, who have no common ownership whatsoever and no common vested interest with the Magic. And the other thing is that the Solar Bears were using Fairwinds Credit Union before their season started. Before the Magic signed this deal. And I don't know whether there's something in there where since the Solar Bears started with Fairwinds Credit Union, they had the opportunity to finish.
Right.
Whereas the Predators signed this contract for this year with Fairwinds Credit Union after the Magic had already signed with JP Morgan Chase.
Oh, okay. It's come out now. I saw the Bushy interview that was done on television. you know, he makes a good point, you know, after hearing everything too. In your opinion, do you think this thing will be settled now that it is finally out in the open? Because, I mean, you know, sometimes the cities do not want to promote these type of things, you know, except, you know, when they're going to sue somebody, you know, they're going after the little guy, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, in your opinion, do you think the Predators will
the story's kind of changed since then, just a little bit. So I guess we'll hold off on answering that. But I will say this from the standpoint of the city. The city is making a big push to try to get a soccer stadium for Orlando City Soccer in efforts of trying to lure an MLS team here, or I should say, take Orlando City and take them out of USL Pro and put them in the MLS.
Right.
But that's not – it's not going to look good if the city has to go after one of its tenants and ends up in a lawsuit, countersuit type of thing where, in all likelihood – the net result is not much to either, you know, to either side.
Right.
So it's not good for the team. It's not good for the city. It's not good for Mr. Bushy. Perhaps, as we found out a little later in the week, fast forwarding to tonight.
Which we might as well go ahead and go with. I was sitting on the train coming home tonight, and all of a sudden I see, I think I saw your email first, and then I happened to see the tweet. Breaking news, Brett Bushy is out as a managing partner of the Orlando Predators. And I was like, WTF is going on with the Predators, not only that, with Bushy. I was very surprised, and it just gets more interesting from there, doesn't it? You see the headline itself, but you got to read a lot more into it, don't you?
Yeah, and unfortunately, we don't really have all the answers yet as of this hour. It's almost 11 o'clock at night on the East Coast on Wednesday night. But, yeah, this came across to us, and we broke this story. And, in fact, at least as of this hour, there still isn't even a local presence reporting this at all. But we came across the fact that Brett Bushy is no longer with the team. And we got some confirmation from multiple sources, some of which are very close to the situation, confirming to us that it's not the entire ownership that is changing hands. It's
right.
Just Brett Bushy's portion is changing hands. We still don't know who that owner is at this point. We don't know whether it's someone in the current ownership or if it's someone coming in from the outside. If I had to guess, and again, it's purely a guess, it's a matter of someone from the inside is going to be taking over his vested interest. Just because Brett was the managing partner does not make him a majority owner by any stretch of the imagination. If I believe that he had 12% ownership. I've also heard that he had slightly less than 10% ownership. But regardless of what it is, it's a very small percentage of the team that he owns. And there are multiple owners who all own a very small portion of this team. So it will be interesting to see how this comes out in the future. I do want to state the other side of the story.
Yep.
We did get in touch with Brett Bushy. He is still claiming that he is the managing partner of the team. But I am sure that what he is stating is accurate for the current second in life, but it's not going to stay that way. And if you would like the proof, just go to the Predators website, which I conveniently linked to in my story, which doesn't show him involved with the team whatsoever any longer. So an announcement is expected tomorrow from the Predators. We're going to try our best to see if we can figure out who this new owner is before that time comes. But I have been promised that there will be bigger and better for the team going forward from here. It's just a very interesting timing of it with everything going on behind the scenes with this lawsuit. And now to go back and answer your question, I think this is going to be swept under the rug.
Okay.
Now that Brett is no longer a part of the ownership, though I don't know that.
Right. Right now, here's another question I'm going to ask you. Now that it seems like Brett is out with the Predators, what happens to the guarantees that were made earlier by the team and him for, you know, this win guarantee?
Now, I have not gotten any official word from the team, but I've kind of gotten some unofficial word from the team that this is going to be something that the franchise is going to stand behind, at least for this year. Whether this stays the case going forward or not, I don't know. I don't know if they know yet, because this clearly was Brett Bushy's baby, per se. So I would assume that the team is going to honor it going forward, whether it be 20%, where are we at now? 30%, I think. Yeah. Whether it be 30% off next year's season tickets, 40%, 50%, how many ever losses the team ends up accruing. So I do expect them to honor it. I don't know whether it will be the case going forward or not for the 2014 season and beyond.
Well, it's something that they would have to decide. I mean, I said, I think it's just a one-year thing from my understanding, too. And
well, it says it can be revoked at any time.
Yeah.
But the understanding, as Brett announced it at the beginning, is that this was something that the Predators were going to do every single year from here on. The way that he put it, until he was done owning the team, which ironically was 16 games into this season.
That's right. Yep. Yeah. And whether it be tomorrow or whether it was 5 hours ago when it was broken, yeah, I'm glad that the team's going to stand by this. You know, it's showing that they made a promise and they're going to stick by it. You know, if you think about the Arena Bowl, basically, Brett Bushy was the face when it came to the Arena Bowl itself, getting kissed there, et cetera, et cetera. You know, obviously, we're hoping that it is going to be a good game, so it ends up being a positive for the Orlando Predators franchise.
Yeah, I mean, the show will go on one way or the other. With him or without him, the show will go on.
Now, going forward, and I'm sure some fans are thinking, well, wait a minute. If Brett Bushy is out, what is the current status of the team? Is the team in trouble? You know, what can the fans in Orlando and the rest of the fans in the Arena Football League think when it comes to this type of thing occurring?
I don't think there's much to read into here. I just think this is a matter of one guy just either deciding that he no longer wanted his stake in the team, could not keep his stake in the team, or that I guess the rest, you know, when you have a conglomeration of owners, there's a lot of things that can go on, especially when you don't have a majority owner.
Right.
So it would be easy to push out a minority owner if that were the case. I'm not saying that's the case by any stretch of the imagination. We don't know at this hour what the case is, but you know, we do expect that this is going to be not a hostile takeover by any stretch of the imagination. And I think if this was something that was done quietly, that it would not be rumored as, you know, that would not end up being that big of a deal.
Right. Okay. And it's funny, Adam, just as you have said just that, we have been handed something that we want to make sure that we give a full update to all of our fans. Go ahead, take it away.
Yeah, I apologize. If it sounded like I was slowing down and like I was reading something, it's because I was reading something. We're learning that the Predators' new managing partner will actually be someone who is currently associated with the current ownership group. So theoretically, the only change in the Predator ownership group is going to be that Brett Bushy will no longer be a part of it, but it will not be a matter of someone who is completely an outsider taking over. So this is probably about as good of news as you could have asked for if you're a Predator, from the standpoint of continuity. Nothing really should change from that standpoint, short of the fact that the face of the ownership group is
right,
going to be someone totally different.
Okay. And another topic that we were talking about this week, and it's something that we all noticed, blowouts. Oh, my Lord.
Yay, B for blowout.
Yeah, B for blowout. It was just an atrocious day if you were obviously on the losing end this week, and we'll give one good example. San Jose Sabercats, they totally shellacked the Pittsburgh Power by a record for away team, for the visiting team in AFL history. I think it was 58 points, I think.
Yep, 78-20.
Yeah.
And the ironic part of that is it's not even the biggest blowout in a Sabercats game ever. Sabercats beaten 82-21 2 years ago by
at home.
The Gladiators.
At home, right?
No. Well, they were the road team.
Oh, they were the road team.
Right. The game was at the Q.
Okay.
But yeah, this was just one of the many very ugly games. I wrote an article that literally took me till about 2-something in the morning, the day after all the games to break. But, yeah, there were four games that were decided by at least 30 points. Mm-hmm. The average margin of victory in the games for last week was over 31 points per game.
It was something stupid.
And just, it's really ridiculous to think that the margins are that outrageous. So we looked it up. And yes, it has been totally unprecedented to have anything that outrageous. The only other time in league history that the average margin of victory was over 30 points in a week was back in 1989, and there were two games that week. So there, we have seen nothing like what we saw this past week. Every game was decided by at least 14 points. Every game now in the last 2 weeks has been decided by at least 13 points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really bad. If you have been a, as I call them, a have not, you have definitively been not.
Yeah.
And it just does not seem like it's going to get any better. And I wrote a piece, on, that was published early in the wee hours of Sunday morning, stating really just how bad of a week it really was and how bad this is for the AFL. It's great to see, you know, Arizona dominating and Spokane dominating and all that, but what really is bad to see is what the fate has been for a whole bunch of teams that have been outscored brutally, as we have seen with the case with Pittsburgh and with other teams over the course of the last couple weeks.
Yeah, the two games last week, which were the closest, was the Predators-Barnstormers game and the Tampa Bay-San Antonio game, if I'm doing my math correctly quickly here. The other game was Spokane-Jacksonville. So those are the three games. Those are less than 30 points. But, you know, you talk about have-nots. You know, Tampa Bay, they're having problems ever since A.D. Mack's been hurt. Jacksonville, I mean, you know, Spokane's able to sweep Florida this past 2 weeks. I will admit. I mean, I love going to games where your team just actually blows out somebody. And I've been to many of those. You know, the days when I went to the Albany Firebirds, I mean, many a game where, you know, whether it had been the Miami Hooters, Texas the Terror, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, Minnesota Fighting Pike, blowouts. But consistently in 1 week, no. That's horrible. You really, really cannot have something that, you know, ended up the way that it did, can you?
No, it's just game after game after game. And one of the things that I brought up in this article is just how badly the Power have been over the course of their time in the Arena Football League. This is obviously their third year. The record is going to state that they have 17 wins. We both know that they rightfully really only have 15. They won one of those games by forfeit and one of those games by scabs. So it hasn't been pretty for them. This year alone, they've been outscored by, I don't have the number, here we are, by 29, 26, 28, 38, and 58 in five of their eight home games this season.
Oh, boy.
And it's just got to be so depressing when you're a fan and you show up. And, oh, by the way, this 58-point beatdown was on national television.
That's true,
which
too.
Which isn't going to make us look any better either.
No.
So it's really brutal, and I just can't picture how being a fan in Pittsburgh and knowing that you can show up and your team could lose by 58 freaking points. It's got to be disheartening, and it's ultimately, in my opinion, going to lead to the demise of Pittsburgh and several more of these teams in the AFL. If not this year, then very soon in the near future.
Yeah, unless Pittsburgh does go ahead and figure stuff out when it comes to their starting quarterback, because it's basically been a crapshoot the entire, you know, time that they've been around. And, you know, some of these other teams, they've played better, you know, in past weeks. But yeah, I'm just hoping, obviously, like everybody else too, is that it is just a blip. This 1 week of a blip, you know, sometimes we'll have weeks where all home teams will win. Sometimes all, you know, we've had it where all away teams have won. Let's just hope that this is a blip. Because as you said, it's not been, you know, the past 2 weeks, you know, average 13 and 14 points. Luckily, we're not going to have it, you know, with the games that are scheduled next week, that we're not going to have anything like that. You know, obviously we just want it to become more competitive. It is an embarrassment to be blown up by that many points on TV. We've had that before, Adam. Remember?
Oh, look at the playoffs last year.
Oh, well, remember the first game that was broadcast on ABC once they got back into the regional stuff? It was a Dallas, who was it? I can't remember.
Oh, Dallas played New York and it was like 60-7.
Yeah, exactly. So
it was on NBC, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was ABC. Anyways, it was on national television. It was on national television. It may have been NBC because they did regional action. So I think you're right.
So yeah, I mean, I remember watching that game and going, ugh.
Yeah. So.
But I mean, look at the playoffs last year. Philadelphia beat Jacksonville up. Mm-hmm. I mean, just totally busted them up.
Mm-hmm. And we've had Tampa slamming Tulsa a few years back also. In the playoffs.
Nobody likes to see this.
No. No. Home team, okay, home crowd, yes. But overall, no. You know, I'd rather see a game as, like, you know, the Jacksonville-Arizona Arena Bowl was. That's what you want to see. High scoring, but also basically even across the board. So, I mean, what needs to be done? Is it a player thing? Not necessarily. Is it injuries? Possibly. I mean, look at some of the teams that got blown out.
Well, competitive balance is out where
you're just in the state. I think it's a competitive balance. And then next year, I think it may have to, you know, you have to look at that because right now, the difference between, you know, they talk about parity, that is not happening, in my opinion, in the Arena Football
League. I know we're going to be bringing that up here again soon.
So, yeah. But it's, you know, the difference between the two, American Conference, National Conference, there's no, you know, they're not even close. They're not even close. So, you know, when some people joke around saying that possibly the first round of the playoffs between Arizona and whomever will be the actual Arena Bowl, I understand what you're getting at. It's the best matchup. But unfortunately, that's not going to be the case. Will we see a surprise like we did last year? Who knows? We've seen people, you know, Dallas gets totally shellacked by Columbus in the playoffs. Weirder things have happened, right? So.
Yeah.
We have questions from the fans this week. We have a few. I know we got to you guys a little bit later than normal. I do apologize. Adam was working on a lot of the breaking story when it came to the Bushi situation. But I applaud the few of you that went ahead and did send us questions anyways. Let me go to them. Here we go. Okay. The question from John Benoit, he was talking about the Predators. Please see earlier. I think we went ahead and answered your question for you. Sort of a question that we were talking about before from Melvin Moten. How do you explain the quality gap between the good and the bad teams in the league? Do you think we can get through the rest of the season without any more surprises? Well, depending on what you consider to be a surprise, right, Adam?
Yeah. Never a dull day in the AFL, as we're learning. My wife would attest to the fact that I have not seen a lot of her over the course of the last 5 days with all of this stuff going on. But in terms of the competitive balance, what do you do to fix it? The truth of the matter, what you do to fix it is you blow the whole thing up and start over because there's no excuse. There is zero excuse for the balance of power being as ridiculous as it is. Mm-hmm. You're going to have great teams. You're always going to have great teams. But the fact of the matter is this isn't baseball. Every team has it's not really a salary cap. It's just a flat salary, which you pay your players. I still insist. I won't say that there's cheating, but it goes without saying that there are some teams that do more for their players than others, and those teams that do are the ones that are winning. It's mm-hmm. not surprising. Mm-hmm. So until you get that garbage out of the game, it's not going to change. The haves are always going to be the haves, and the have-nots are always going to be the have-nots.
Yeah.
And yes, there is a built-in perk when you're a Florida team, and I'm not suggesting the Florida teams are necessarily cheating, but you're playing in Florida. It's not a bad life. You know, you got Disney here in Orlando. You got the beach a couple miles from Tampa. You're right on the beach in Jacksonville. Now, it's not a bad life. Would you rather play there or would you rather play in, you know, Rockford?
Yeah.
So there is something to be said about that when there's no way to change salaries from the $825 a game that these guys are making now. But it's ridiculous just how outrageous it is. You're going to have a team go 4-14 or 3-15 in any season. But the fact is it 3-15 and being outscored by 10 points per game, or is it 3-15 and being outscored by 20 points per game? And there's a huge difference between those two things.
There is. I mean, we're going to, you know, as I said, it would be nice where everybody was all even, but you know, do you really want all teams 9-9? No.
Absolutely not.
Unfortunately, there has to be, you know, a little bit of separation between the teams, but we just want, you know, the teams to be competitive. And I think, you know, as we've mentioned before, and I mentioned again, to me this year, I think it's always been, it's been about the quarterbacks. You know, the league's thin on quarterbacks. And just look at all the injuries, you know. You know, it, you need a good quarterback that knows the game, that, that's able to play the game properly. And we've had some inexperienced quarterbacks play, but we've had some pretty good surprises. I'll use Chris Dixon as a good example. He's been, he got into the right situation. He's been a very, he's been a pretty good surprise, you know, when it comes to what we're seeing, seeing from him as a quarterback. So, great question. Now, I have a question that goes back to last week from a fan, and let me see if I can.
Yeah, Nick.
Yeah, from Nick Saribia. And the question was as follows. It was a two-part question. We weren't able to really answer the first part of it, but we were able to get some information from him. We were able to get an answer. So the question was, when an owner buys into the league or owns a team, is it a one-time payment of X amount of money, or is it a yearly payment that they have to pay? Example, if a franchise costs $50,000, is it a one-time payment from an owner of $50,000, or is it every year they must pay? Now, the answer was very, very complicated, but it's, I'm just going to get basically into it and try to give you the short answer to this. There is a combination. To purchase a franchise, as an example, Pittsburgh, say they paid $3 million. That amount is either paid up front or on an installment plan with interest. You know, what people can pay depend on what people paid depended on when they joined the league, and range widely from $100,000 to about $3 million. There is a most favored pricing that if there is a new franchise sold below a certain amount, then a team would get a rebate. So, but when it comes to selling existing franchises, you know, I think it's up to the actual owner. You know, as an example, Adam, let's say for whatever reason the Orlando Predators were to be sold to another ownership group, whether it be in the same city or not, and they wanted to have a, you know, let's say they wanted $1 million for the franchise, it would be up to the actual owner, the owner's current ownership group to say, okay, you can pay us either all up front or you can pay us in basically installments. That's my understanding of the answer that was given to us. So it's
And I read the same thing you read, and that's basically what I took from that too.
Yeah. So I hope that helps. I thought it was a good question. Very interesting.
It was an excellent question. Yeah. It was the first question all year we couldn't answer because we didn't know the answer.
Exactly.
As opposed to we just couldn't talk about the answer.
Exactly. And I want to thank the person who answered the question for us. It was greatly, greatly appreciated. Week 18 in the Arena Football League is now upon us. All teams are again playing all week. Yay, thank God. But it's getting very, very interesting, as we talked about earlier in the show, when it comes to the playoff seedings and playoff structure in the Arena Football League. Very interesting. The first one this week is a very interesting matchup, Adam. San Antonio travels all the way to Spokane. Both these teams do have playoff implications. You know, Spokane's already clinched a wild card. It's just a matter of where they're going to be placed. San Antonio, on the other hand, they win. Then it's up to Chicago. They lose. It could get even worse for the Talons, couldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, let's call this for what it is. It's not the most important game in the world for Spokane, but it, you know, the formula here for the Shock is simple.
Right.
You need to win two games. If you win two games, you're going to get a home game in the playoffs. Actually, you're almost certainly going to get a home game in the playoffs if you win two games, because Spokane's magic number is two between its wins and San Jose losses to clinch up the number three seed and thus, I guess, indirectly a home game, or at least a game played at home, whether they're called the home team or not,
right,
against Chicago, because San Antonio's magic number to be eliminated is two between its losses and Chicago's wins. So there's a good opportunity that San Antonio and Chicago are – you know, Chicago could clinch the Central this week. Spokane could conceivably clinch the number three seed this week. This is a big one. And I just, there's a point that the Rohan Davey thing is going to have to stop. It's driving me nuts. Either the league has dropped that far that Rohan Davey really can be an elite quarterback in this league, or at some point they're going to catch up to him. I mean, I look at the game a couple weeks ago where Davey played a miserable game against San Jose, and I have to think that's going to be the same type of thing that we see this week against Spokane. I've got to imagine the Shock are going to win this game comfortably.
I'm thinking too. And by the last time that these guys played earlier in 2013, Xavier Lee was actually their starting. I think Nickel started, and then Xavier Lee came in with the Shock pulling out a 61-48 win at the Alamo Dome. So, you know, they talk about Death Valley. I think it's exactly what it is. I think the Shock really have a good chance. I think they have a better chance at winning this game. It's all about what San Antonio can try to stop the Shock from doing. If they can't do it, I mean, right now our fans have Spokane favored by 15 points. So, yeah, I'm picking the Shock in this one too. But it's, you know, I'm looking at both Chicago and San Antonio. It's a cool race, I will admit, but, you know, what these two teams have for the rest of the season, man, it's going to be tough, I will admit. Saturday, another game that is very important in the playoff race, and especially the Southern Division, is Jacksonville travels to New Orleans to play the Voodoo.
Yeah, and this obviously is a game the Voodoo have to – odds have it, it's a game the Voodoo have to win to stay alive in the playoff race in the American Conference. And for Jacksonville, I mean – What does Jacksonville really have to play for? Sure, they could catch Philadelphia and ultimately be the one seed in the conference, and I know Coach Moss is going to be vying for that, but there's a big difference between the Soul and the Sharks right now. I mean, Philadelphia has outscored its foes by over 200 points this year. Jacksonville's outscored its foes by 41.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very clear who the superior team is. So Jacksonville doesn't have much to play for, and New Orleans has everything to play for. I do think the Voodoo are going to find a way to win this game and make next week's game a potential play-in against Orlando.
Last time these two teams played back in April, Jacksonville smoked New Orleans by a score of 76-30. Two different teams, though.
Two very different teams. We still don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback in Jacksonville, but we do know who it's going to be in New Orleans. And Chris Dixon is definitely going to want to prove, if nothing else, that he can come back to Orlando and potentially knock Orlando out of the playoffs in 2 weeks, and that's something that the Voodoo were not going to want to squander.
Exactly. The CBS Sports Network Game of the Week, Orlando is traveling to Cleveland. This is, again, a big game, but only for the Orlando Predators.
Here's a good idea. Let's put Pittsburgh and Cleveland on the CBS Sports Network in back-to-back weeks. Yeah, I mean, Cleveland is one of these teams that I really want to like because I know they play hard. I really like their coaching staff. I know Chris Durker has improved, has passed the eye test a lot more. Statistics may not show it, but the eye test suggests that he's been better as the year has gone on. But the bottom line for the Gladiators is they're just not that freaking good. I still think this is a potentially dangerous game for Orlando. I think this is a game that the Predators could easily overlook, but I do think this is a game that they are going to find a way to win.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the last time that these two teams played in June. Hey, Adam, same two quarterbacks. It's the same two quarterbacks that are actually going to be under center. This game, I think you were at this game, actually. It ended up being
I was on vacation.
It was a 7-point win for the Orlando Predators, so it's...
It was an ugly game.
Yeah. I'm rooting I'm looking at, I think I chose, Orlando to win this game. Cleveland may surprise, but, who knows? Who really knows? Next game of the week is another huge game for one of these teams. Pittsburgh comes into Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay, again, our understanding is win and they are in the playoffs.
It is definitely win and in, because 8 wins is better than that. You know, 8 wins is better than 7 wins. I don't care what the AFL says, 8-10 is better than 7-11.
Exactly. So, again, Tampa Bay is still on that huge losing streak ever since A.D. Mac went down. They aren't. I don't know, Adam. It just seems that. Sure, they lost a few wide receivers to the Ellingson to the Tiger Cats, but having Joe Hills, it seems that that they've been doing as far as getting on the same page. Hills and Hubert, I'm getting it wrong. Thank you. They seem to be complementing each other okay. They're not just getting the win, so that's the problem.
Well. These two teams have combined to lose 12 games in a row, and that's tough to swallow, but there's something brewing in Tampa Bay right now. It's not good. And I can't put my finger on it. It's just, you look at the team and the way they play, it just seems as though when something goes wrong in a game, and look, something goes wrong in almost every game you're gonna play, but it just seems like right now when something goes wrong, this team is not fighting adversity. And that could be scary.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh just got its butt kicked last week by 58 freaking points. It's going to want to show that that's not who the Pittsburgh Power are, I would hope.
But then again, look on the other end, look at Tampa Bay losing by how much they did. They themselves want to make sure they say that we can win a game again, we can break the streak, and we can finally clinch a playoff spot.
Yeah, I'm taking Pittsburgh in this game. If for no other reason, just to be a contrarian and to make the league sweat over its tiebreakers for another week.
Our fans have Tampa Bay favored by 11 points.
That's ridiculous.
I want Tampa Bay to win to finally clinch that playoff spot. I understand what you're getting at, but I think Tampa Bay will be the team that finally breaks this losing streak. The Bacon Bowl. The Bacon Bowl is happening. Are you hungry, Adam? Oh, we already did that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we already did that.
Yeah, we already did that. That's right. Utah travels to Iowa. What is the current status of Boltis? He went out last week and Tommy Grady came in, as backup, and I don't know what the current status is of Boltis is going to be. I've heard
Fort Knox. That, we'll find out on Saturday.
I do know, let me just double checking something real quick here. There it is. Checking the player records. It was Grady did come in, and hey, Adam, he comes in a relief effort and he does not throw a pick.
Maybe that's the key, is make it so he comes in off the bench. So start like Mario Rudia, a quarterback or something. Utah's a mess. Utah's given up. I don't think Iowa's given up. I watched that team last week. They didn't play a bad game against Orlando. The argument could be made that they should have won the game against Orlando, and if not for kind of a really crappy bounce on a kickoff, they may have beaten Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
So I will take the Barnstormers by two slabs of bacon in this game.
Yeah, I'm taking nice. That's perfect. I didn't even think of what type of reference. That's a good reference. I like that. Oh, I like that. The Blaze have won the last three games in this series. Again, as you said, Utah's a mess. I'm going to take Iowa by a pigskin. How's that sound?
Mm-hmm.
yours is still better. Chicago, in that hunt, they will know what the where San Antonio stands, because obviously they've been playing on Friday night. They will know where they stand when it comes to, do they need to, basically they know if they want to win, but where they're going to stand. But they're traveling to Arizona, man. They're traveling, and it's going to be throwback night. I don't know if anybody has seen the pictures that we've tweeted out from Coach Guy. So full 90s, retro uniform for the Arizona Rattlers. Now the question is, and we've seen that he's claiming that they're not, but it looks like Coach Guy is going to have the team play no matter what, even though they've clinched.
Yeah, and there's really no reason not to. I mean, maybe, if the game ends up being a blowout, I would be a little more inclined to take Nick Davila out a little bit earlier,
mm-hmm.
than he has been. But, the truth of the matter is Arizona's offensive line makes sure he doesn't get hit. And, most of the plays that Davila was running at the end of the Orlando game, which I was at, were very safe, very difficult to, unless the Predators were going to just blatantly wail on him. It would have had to been something blatant just to put a finger on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, This Chicago team is the grittiest team that we have seen in a long time in this league. It's a team that has everything going against it, and now it's got to go out to the West Coast in back-to-back weeks when the last home, you know, last game should have been at home. I just don't think it's going to be enough. It doesn't matter what happens to San Antonio in terms of how hard Chicago is going to play. Obviously, if San Antonio loses, this game is for the division title. If San Antonio wins, this game is to stay in first place in the Central Division going into that last week and to still essentially control their own destiny. I just don't see anybody stopping this Arizona train. I know a lot of people do think that Chicago can hang in this one. I just don't see, whether it be Luke Drone or Carson Kaufman, being able to go on the road into the pit and winning a game like this one.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this game may start off okay, but I think this game's going to end up really, really ugly. Probably very similar to what happened last week. You know, New Orleans was able to hang in, but in the end, nope. There was no way. Last game of the week, late game of the week, Philadelphia travels to San Jose. San Jose is still in it, and, you know, as far as when it comes to wild card, as far as and where they want to end up as far as their final seed.
Yeah, and if Jacksonville loses earlier in the night against New Orleans, Philadelphia will know coming into this game that a win, and it will be the number one seed in the American Conference, American Conference, and yep. There will be no doubt about that. And I do think Philly's going to win this game. Philly is rolling right now, and I know San Jose is coming off of that 58-point whomping, but Philly is rolling right now, and I think the Soul are out to prove that they can beat anyone in this league. And this is as much of a statement game as it is anything else.
Yeah, no, I think so too. It could be very interesting. I mean, the Cats are at home. Philadelphia just have to travel across country.
Russ Magnus is playing phenomenal football right now for San Jose.
Yep, they have. Philadelphia has won the last. Well, since the relaunch of the AFL, they've split the series, and they've been very close games. I mean, literally, both of them a touchdown each way. So this could be a very, very entertaining game. So I would think if you have the chance of being able to watch this game on AFL.
Is this the first time these two have met since 08? Since the Arena Bowl?
No. They've actually played twice since the relaunch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. San Jose won by 7 in 2011. And Philadelphia won by 6 in 2012.
All home teams in this series, save for one game in 2008.
That's correct. Yeah. So take it for what it's worth, but it could be very interesting. I think it's probably, if I were to say, probably one of the second best games of the week, aside from the Spokane-San Antonio game on Friday. It's been a long night, you guys. I'm glad you stayed with us. If you only knew what we went through tonight.
I've been working for almost 7 hours on this now.
It's been a very long night between stops and starts with the podcast and whatnot. I know you guys don't know from the time that we've seen this, but it's been a very long night. Obviously, if you, keep up to date with us on any breaking news, you can head over to our main page over at arenafan.com. Make sure you check out our Twitter feeds. If you want to contact Adam for whatever reason, adam.markowitz at arenafan.com. And myself, tim.capper at arenafan.com. Before we go, Adam, I know it's been a very long night, but any parting words?
God, the British Open is going to start in about an hour. British Open gets started at 1:32 in the morning on the other side of the pond. Let's see, it's about 12:30 now.
Yeah.
I'll take the field against Tiger.
Okay. Again,
if you want to see a good rant,
yeah,
with a lot of profanities, I'm at AFL Guru on Twitter.
There you go. So you're pretty open.
I did a lot of ranting this week. I've been pretty pissed.
Yeah, check out your Facebook page too. That also.
Yeah, I'm pretty pissed on that too.
Yep. So we'll let you guys know next week when we want to have questions. You'll be able to send them to us before the show. And we hope you do join us next time. So for everybody here at the AFL Tonight Studios, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.